Rappin' with Reef Bum is sponsored by Polo Reef, Champion Lighting and Supply, and GHL.
Hey, what's happening, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Rappin' with Reef Bum. I'm your host, Keith Berkelhammer. So on tonight's show, I have the pleasure of welcoming back Jim Graham, also known as Telegram. What's happening there, Jim?
What's up, y'all? Hey, Keith. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited for this.
I'm excited to have you back on there, Jim. Always a very lively discussion. Never know exactly what rabbit hole we're going to be going down, but
we're good at that.
Should be another good one. See a bunch of people in the chat there. Hey, Andrew Sandler. I see Andy. Great beer to reap. Thanks again, Paul. Champion Lighting and Supply, John Wright. Welcome, welcome. Just a little intro about Jim. As I mentioned, he's also known as Telegram on Instagram and YouTube. Are you keeping that YouTube channel up, man, or not really? Kind of slacking off?
No, I haven't been on in over a year. I'm feeling it again. It might be time.
Yeah.
But I got to clean up this room before I do anything. We've been renovating the place, so I've had other priorities.
I can't tell that, you know, you got a mess behind you.
It's a little bit of a... I hide it with my girth.
Well, there's other ways to hide shit, you know. I mean, that's...
Oh, I can put the green screen up, right?
All right, so the YouTube channel is potentially going to be back online soon. Instagram, you've got about 6,700 followers on Instagram. You've been a reef-keeping hobbyist for about 11 years. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So Jim likes to take equipment apart, study build quality, and you know, better understand how things function. He's operated on a number of products from GHL, Neptune, and other manufacturers. The data from his tests have yielded some very unique and unbiased insights. Jim is retired Air Force. Thank you again for the service there, Jim.
Thank you.
Formerly assigned to the KC-135 aerial refueler, the B-2 stealth bomber, and the YAL-1A airborne laser.
Pew-pew.
And additionally, Jim appreciates kind people and is a fan of technology. That's not a surprise.
Well, I like sassy people too, but yeah, we'll see how this talk
goes. Yeah, there you go. But before we do start chatting with Jim, I want to take care of some business and thank the sponsors of this show. My sponsors are really important because they make the show possible with their support, and that means a lot since I want to continue to bring on awesome guests to help foster a learning environment on the show. Polar Reef. Make sure to check out Polar Reef's new YouTube video that drops this Friday. A school in Iowa travels to New York to visit Polar Reef, where 40 high school students passionate about a marine aquarium get an experience of a lifetime. It's going to be an experience of a lifetime. Well, it already happened. And given the Polar Reef team a fantastic presentation. Dr. Gregory Berard is going to be on my show next week. So he's the guy.
Yeah, I was
going
to ask you. I saw that. That's
cool. He's the guy that runs that program. So make sure to subscribe to their YouTube channel at Polar Reef for video drop notifications. Champion Lighting and Supply, besides being a place for hobbyists to purchase saltwater aquarium supplies online, Champion Lighting is also a wholesale distributor for many popular brands. If you own an aquarium store or an aquarium service company, contact Champion Lighting through the website at championlighting.com to set up a wholesale account. And then finally, GHL. Personally, I'm all in on GHL products. I know you are too there, yep. Jim. I have a lot of success using their dosers, the controllers, the Mitra lights, Cage Director, etc. They produce high-quality German-engineered products. For more information or to purchase their stuff, you can visit aquariumcomputer.com/USA. I also sell their products on reefbum.com. All right. One more thing to mention before we dive into this conversation. We're doing a Reef Bum work shirt and hat work shirt giveaway tonight. One lucky person is going to be able to don the same uniform that I am wearing tonight, that I wear every night on the Rappin' with Reef Bum show. We're going to do it later in the show, so stay tuned for details on how to enter this awesome giveaway. You're going to get your name, personalized shirt with your name on it.
Please hold while I open my email and get prepared.
So, dude, what's going on with the tank? Let's start with that.
That tank, so how long have I had that tank up? A year and maybe seven, 8 months.
I'm showing the video you sent me.
Oh, you are? I can start playing just in case you have questions or comments. But I shot a nice moody vid. So this is 100 IM EXT. This is my first fancy tank, and I promptly scratched it, but whatever. I mean,
how'd you scratch it?
You got to break that. I was using a ceramic blade.
Ooh.
And the ceramic and the glass is no go for me. Mm. So, but super easy tank. I got Moki had a, oh crap, I can't remember what brand. Moki had a Inappropriate Reefer had a sump at his place. He's like, hey, use a sump. I'm like, cool. So all I had to do was pay for the tank, got the sump from Moki. GHL had provided 2 Mitris, and then I've got the Refi Uno 2.0 Pro in between the 2 Mitris. So that gives me a nice fat spectrum that I'm chasing. And then I Jabo powerheads. I've got an Orlushi return pump, DC return pump. I don't have anything fancy in that tank. Yeah. Except for the lights. I would classify the lights as kind of fancy. And maybe the critters. I mean, the critters I've had, some of those I've had for a really long time. So, but the tank itself is you know, it's offering me a couple opportunities to learn. I had Cyano back in February that I treated with Chemiclene. And then Cyano resurfaced. And I think you guys were talking about this a little bit when you had Andy and Eli on. But that the potential for it to come back is pretty good as long as you address whatever the hell the magic is that makes that stuff show up. And I can't figure it out.
Yeah,
you
haven't figured it out yet.
No, I have no idea what's making it happen. I mean, the tank is relatively consistent. It's stable for the most part. And I'm not doing anything weird. But I can say that I again treated with chemically. I started doing, well, you helped me a little bit. Can we talk about that?
Sure.
How you're an official helper now?
Yeah, so you're talking about Fauna Marine, and I've been certified by Claude and the Fauna Marine team as an ICP test evaluator. So yeah, I mean basically they have advisors. It's called an advisor, and
which is cool.
Yeah, you know, I think it's something that I've been doing weekly Fauna Marine ICP tests for a long time. And so I've become very familiar with the Fauna Marine ICP test tool, and there are a lot of tools in there. And I'm not doing this to try to get people to buy the Fauna Marine ICP test thing. I'm just talking about my own experience, and I have been using it weekly because I have been fighting some cyano myself as well. Yep. And so one of the big things that Claude, had, you know, when I had him on, we talked a lot about, you know, the halogens and the dynamic elements. And so I think that was the advice I was giving you is like, look at, you know, iodine, you know, fluoride and bromine. Yep. And yep. If one of those or a couple of those are out of whack, too high, too low, that could be potentially a reason why cyano is present. So I know you had one of those elements was pretty low, right? You had low iodine.
Yeah. Yeah, I had low iodine. Which was an interesting because I'm using Fauna Marine ICPs as well. First, you can enter your own ICPs, so it doesn't really matter, and which is cool of them. You can enter ICP results from other providers, but the speed with which you get results, because you just send it down to CoralView, CoralView sends it out. You've tipped me off on the when to send that kit. I did send one last Friday. I expect the results back sometime this week. I mean, their turnaround is exceptional for tests that are going out to Germany.
Yeah, let me interject quickly. So I had been sending mine out on Mondays, thinking that that would be the quickest turnaround to get to Germany, and it had been taking like 7 days when I was sending it on Mondays. And then Claude said to me, "You know what? Send it out on a Friday. For whatever reason, that'll potentially expedite it." And I did send it out on Friday, and I got the first set of results back on a Wednesday, which was awesome.
Yep.
And then the next test that I sent in on a Friday, it sat for a week someplace in some United States Postal Service depot, sitting there. I don't know what the hell was going on. It just sat there for a week. And of course, you know, I just got those results back, but that was like 10 days later. But that wasn't the, you know, that was the United States Postal Service. So I digress. Go ahead.
But they're, for me, their turnaround's fantastic. And then I was chatting with a gentleman in Germany who has worked for Funimer in the past, doesn't work there anymore. And just regardless of his feelings, his personal feelings, he spoke so highly of that test team, which was, that's all I needed. So I'm all in on those tests now. So I've got a box or two in the garage. Keep those on hand. But anyway, that last test came back, and I shared that with you. And my calcium had dropped, for which was weird. A few things dropped, to include iodine. So I started bringing the iodine back up. But that that cyano had progressed too far. Nitrates, phosphates were fine. Everything was fine. Everything else was cool except for those had dropped. And I didn't get the fluoride test. I didn't do that one because they offered two types of tests.
Oh, you didn't
tests,
do
right?
the total reef ICP?
I didn't do the total.
You
I did
should
the
do
other.
That, man. You should get...
No, I have one total. I was going to do that every 6 months, but...
Fluoride is really important. You know, I think that's something that I never really had monitored before. Mm-hmm. And when I started doing the Fonamarine ICP test and I started looking at my fluoride levels... I noticed that I was deficient. So I used I think you're also using the Captivate Aquaculture trace elements. So I started dosing the Captivate fluoride. And, you know, one thing that I definitely noticed was that the blues were popping when I started dosing fluoride. So, and you can't go crazy with the fluoride at the beginning. It could be bad if you overdose it.
Yep.
So, but, you know, I think the halogens are really important. And in terms of reading an ICP test, the most important stuff is near the top of the report, and the lesser, less important stuff is near the bottom. So, but I also focus on the dynamic elements, which are yeah. like yeah, zinc, yeah. vanadium, copper, nickel, and molybdenum.
But I like the way those tests are laid out. I like the way the results are laid out. I like the way that you can, like I said, you can enter your own results. You can enter your personal data if you like
right.
to trend it there. But having all of my ICPs in a single place makes sense to me. That and a turnaround. That and I think ultimately if I get enough of those tests in there, I'll be able to get some predictions back. This is turning into a Fonamer and ICP commercial, but
I know.
But I like that service. I think that service provides more bang for the buck than the other ones out there. So I like that. So right now I should be back on track with iodine. I did, like I said, I sent out another test on Friday, and we'll see what it looks like hopefully tomorrow or Thursday. I did make some minor adjustments with Captivate.
What are you dosing with the Captivate product?
Oh, crap. You're going to make me pull out my list. I'm dosing whatever Chris told me to dose.
Chris Wood.
Yeah, Chris Wood, based on my results. So I mix up a gallon at a time, which makes it super easy. So you fill up your water jug with, I think we probably talked about this last time too, but you fill up your water jug almost all the way, and then you add the other goodies to that gallon, then you top off that water, and now that's your water for however long you dose. That usually lasts me about a month.
Yep.
And it costs about $1 to make that trace. So, I mean, that certainly tickles my budget gene, and having customized information back from Chris Wood makes it even better. So, I mean, I make up 2 gallons at a time, and I just keep this jug in my garage, and I refill the dosing container that's under the tank every once in a while. But iron also dropped, so it wasn't just iodine. Calcium, iodine, iron, a whole bunch of things just totally dropped.
So, I had been dosing iron because I was getting a lot of zeros on my ICP tests, and Claude basically said to me, don't worry about dosing iron. Don't worry about dosing manganese, even though you're getting zeros. Don't worry about dosing cobalt, even though you're getting zeros. Just focus on those dynamic elements. And, he kind of described it as almost like over-fertilizing a tank if you're dosing too much stuff. And you know what the most important thing is, Jim? The corals. Look at the corals, man. You know, if the corals look good, then you're good, right? There's no reason... to monkey around with stuff if the corals are looking good and healthy. I had like a big drop in my phosphates recently, you know, for both systems, because I was finding some cyano and I wanted to cut down on what I was dosing with the phosphate and all that stuff. So I really cut it. I cut back on the phosphate dosing, but I also, on one of the systems, I had an algae scrubber going, and that algae scrubber worked really well and stripped, you know, nutrients out really too quickly. And man, the fading that I had seen on a lot of my corals was like, it was crazy. I was like, holy crap, man, that's like really impacting the corals themselves in terms of those low phosphate levels. So I brought the phosphate levels up, and nearly, you know, all the, you know, I only have frags right now. Nearly all the frags rebounded in great fashion. And I then I started to like bump up the phosphates even more, because I was worried, because I was getting some zeros on my test kits. But I was getting more cyano. But the corals were looking good. So there really, you know, wasn't much of a reason for me to go even higher with the phosphate when the corals were looking good. So I think that's something that a lot of people, you know, might miss in terms of, you know, we're so test focused right now and result data driven that I think an important point is that observation of those corals on a daily basis is really important.
Yeah, I agree. I don't necessarily go actionable when I get results back or if I'm testing at home. I'm not going to knee jerk. I'm going to give it a little while. That big ship, even though it's a small tank, turns every 3 months or so. So any change I make, I'm not expecting to see anything for at least 3 months. Right. I mean, if I see something immediate, it happened 3 months ago, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. So dude, what happened with the ChemiClean, man? I thought you were going to stay at the...
I was going to try to avoid it.
Yeah, what happened? It got that bad?
I was totally going to try to avoid it. Now I'm sitting there and I'm scratching. I was like, I got to do something. So I full dose ChemiClean, but I was also Red X-ing at the time. That's a Phonomer end product, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And
then
I also have some KZ products that... Now I'm just focusing on what can I do on the backside. So I've got my saltwater storage in the garage, has a little bit of cyano in it, but it's dark. It's cryptic. So I've also treated that a little bit with Red X since I don't see cyano in there at all. I mean, it's there, but I don't see it. So now I'm just really focusing on the recovery aspect. So done with Red X, done with ChemiClean. When I ChemiClean... And I don't know that people do this, but I drop my lights. I lower the intensity and put all three lights on acclimation. And then I also cut my Kalkwasser dosing in half. So the tank, because the tank is going to, nitrates and phosphates are going to increase most likely.
Yeah.
And consumption is going to drop. So if you don't proactively do some of those, I mean, I think it works for me. Maybe it doesn't work for everybody, but I proactively drop lights and calc so I don't throw the tank in it, you know, all over the place, because I know the nitrates and phosphates are going to increase. Now the tank's beautiful. Now it looks great.
How the corals look?
Now I just got to figure out, oh, the corals are fine. Everything's happy. I've got SPS living in like 80 par that have color and polyp extension. They're not getting anywhere near what they should be getting for light, but they're happy.
Yeah.
And everything in there is happy. I got a big anemone in there that I got to get out. I think that irritates some of the corals that are in there. Once that's gone, I'll be good to go. But I mean, the tank's fine. The corals are happy. Corals I've had for 9-10 years are in there and they're happy. So I'm just going to now focus on not getting cyano, or at least maintaining cyano.
So, I mean, you stopped, I remember seeing on Instagram that you stopped carbon dosing. Why did you do that?
I'm back. Well,
you're back doing it.
Yeah. So, aquabiomics test. Oh crap. It was October of 23, I think. When I did the tank, it came back with an interesting population, and I shared it with Andy, and Andy's really good with talking me through some of these things, giving me some sense to the tests. And he's like, back off on I was using vinegar. He's like, back off on vinegar. So I had slowly weaned myself off of vinegar. I didn't do it right away, right? I didn't just drop it. And that may have led to the cyano doing what the cyano did. But my numbers, because I did another aquabiomics test right before chemically, yeah. my balance and my whatever the other number, both those numbers, that was the best I'd seen coming out of one of my tanks.
Before so chemically,
the population was, sorry?
Before chemically?
That was before chemically. And then I saw, right, when you guys were on, the impact yeah. to... but I'm looking at just a couple months. I think it'll be back. I know what I've been doing to the tank, so I'll just keep doing that, and it'll rebuild that population, hopefully, with us.
Are you you dosing any bacteria to try to... Yeah, what are you dosing?
So I use Biodigest because of all of those that I've tested, that's certainly the most diverse. Like it, when people talk about adding diversity to your tank, you're not doing that with Brightwell products.
MB7, you're doing that with MB7 clean.
Yeah, and there's no diversity in MB7. So I'm not looking for nutrient control, which I'm not looking for wastewater treatment, which is where MB7 would do its thing. I'm looking for development of that microbiome.
Yeah, I used to use MB7. I use clean as well, just for algae control issues. I never found it really to be effective in that regard, so I stopped using it. And then, and I used it for a long time. I think there was, people were like, you can't just use it for a couple of weeks and then, make a conclusion that it's not doing what you hope it's doing. So I use it for a long time, and so now I'm using the Captivate Remediate for to help control my nitrates, to help keep those things in check. What were your nitrates and phosphates? What typically are your nutrient levels at?
10, 11 nitrates and 0.1 phosphate.
Yeah.
I usually hold right around there until I treat with Chemiclean, and then I double my phosphates.
Oh, yeah.
Nitrates just jumped up like 2.
Yeah, that's not too bad. So what do you think was the cause of the cyano? Do you have any clue?
No, I have no idea. Like, I haven't changed anything other than, it was there before I fiddled with my lights. So that's not it. I don't know if it's coming in on the food. What I haven't done is, right, I'm just focusing on bacteria right now with aquabiomics testing. Yeah. I haven't mixed up like my food and let it hang out in some water for a little bit and filter that juice out and send it in, because it could be in my food for all
what
I
are you,
know.
What are you feeding?
Pellets, just not anything fancy pellets, but two different brands of pellets that I mixed together. PE is one of them. I don't know what the other one is, but it's pellets in the in an auto feeder. Yeah. I'll occasionally drop in some flake.
What curious? What auto feeder are you using?
Oh, cheap one from Amazon.
Yeah. I just picked up the Avasperine plank feeder.
Hmm? Plank? Yeah, Moki loves that plank.
It is, I just started playing around with it today. I mean, it's not cheap, dude,
Nope, not
it's like
at all.
$200, feeder. But I could see why, it's a it's great feeder, because it basically submerges underneath the water, so it's feeding like the freeze dried food, but it mm-hmm. it sinks it, so it's not sitting there floating on the surface and getting washed into the overflow. So the problem for me though is I have 5 tanks, and if I want to go away and use auto feeders, that's I got to be down for $1,000.
If you're going plank.
Right.
I know GHL's coming out with their own, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Let's see what that looks
like. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a cheap auto feeder kind of guy. So I've got whatever that one is that I got on Amazon that's been just flawless. It just works. But that's just for pellets. You really can't do anything
else
with it.
Right. Testing stuff. Reef Exotica by Luis Sansevieres. Kung Fu Corals is testing a cyano treatment combination: Chemiclean, Coral Snow, and Blackout. I don't have any. I don't have any luck with any of those things.
Chemiclean works. It's going to make it go away. Coral Snow, I'm still not totally sold on that.
Yeah. So how
I know KZ will take Snow in conjunction with one of their bacterial products.
Yeah, I've tried that, and I don't know, man. I'm trying.
And cyan was photosynthetic, so a blackout's going to do what a blackout does. So
I you know, so the tank that I'm having the biggest cyano issue, my display tank, my 187 gallon display tank. You know, I took out all the colonies in that tank as I did with the Peninsula tank, and so I had just some LPS corals in there and all the Carib Sea Life Rock, which I freaking hate, and that's a whole nother rant I can go on, but and we should talk about that, but so I decided to just to do a blackout. You know, I had all the colonies out of there. I pulled the few LPS I had out of that tank put them in my frag tanks. I was like, all right, let's test the blackout theory. And I did a 7-day blackout. But the problem was I had a couple of frag tanks connected to that system that I did not blackout. So that, sure. You know, I guess that's how the cyano lives on. But
I don't know. I have the results from the aquabiomics testing of the saltwater storage, and there's cyano in there, but
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, the idea is to figure out how to just keep it unhappy so it doesn't go crazy in your tank. I've got, whatever the one that starts with an X, X-E-N-O, I've got that cyanobacteria storage, but it's super, 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 super low.
Really?
0.006. So I don't think it's a problem.
But you're not seeing it, right? Because it's a cryptic.
No, yeah, that's cryptic. Yeah. I was going to talk to you about that too, because I'm thinking about adding that to my system as a cryptic.
I don't think that would hurt at all. I only see benefits for a cryptic sump.
Yep.
You know, I really do, because I looked inside my cryptic sump recently, and man, the sponges and the microfauna is like going crazy in that thing. You know, I mean, that cannot hurt at all. I don't see any disadvantage of having something cryptic like that that's remote on a system. I really, you know, so much biodiversity in that thing. It's got to be a good thing.
My only challenge is mine's in the garage, so it is going to get some summer and winter temperature swings. It does have a heater in it. I suppose I don't want to be running that thing. Whatever. I guess I could run that in the winter. It doesn't get too, too cold here, but... but I was also thinking about, cause I've got the Maxi that I bought and never did anything the new Maxi.
Yeah. I've got two of those.
And I was like, what if I use a Maxi to occasionally throughout the day, push some water in and pull out.
Mm. Interesting.
I'm kind of almost auto water changing, but I'm doing it with a cryptic.
Yeah. That, I don't know. You know,
so it's not a lot of water.
I guess as long as there's some sort of steady exchange going on, you know.
Like if I'm moving it's 100 gallons. So if I'm moving a couple, 3-5 liters a day, it's still a reasonable exchange.
Jim, man, that's thinking outside of the box.
I mean, I'm just using a smaller pump and moving less water. And then if I did a water change, I would do it not in the tank. I wouldn't be disturbing the tank. I would only do it in the 100 liter. So I could pull out 5 gallons from that thing.
Right.
And my tank wouldn't see it at all. It wouldn't see a fluctuation.
Right. Yeah. You know, I guess it's just a matter of how that could potentially impact life in that remote cryptic sump. You know, can life, you know, thrive in those kind of circumstances? I don't know. You know.
I don't know either.
That's.
Or I'm just auto water changing with the thing. Who knows?
Right.
But it's full. That thing's been wet and circulating. For almost 2 years. So that was how I prepped the rock before it went into the IM. So it's got sand and rubble and rock and media. It's got all sorts of stuff in there, and the A/B testing came back clean. So yeah.
So what the issue is, you don't have like a natural, you know, gravity fed kind of drain into that remote. Right. Okay.
No, I'd have to push it with a pump out of the sump.
That's a hard thing to do.
And then gravity drain back, but it's also in the garage, so I would just have to be careful about freezing.
Yeah, yeah. Let me talk about the Carib Sea Life Rock, man. I got that stuff a couple of years ago because I wanted a more open aquascape, you know, something that would give the fish more swim-throughs and allow more circulation to pass through and you know, so I think it's like 100 pounds of the Carib Sea Life Rock, and man, I've had one problem after another where that stuff like first like green algae, and it seems to be like a cyano magnet. But the thing about that stuff is like it is solid. It is not porous at all.
Concrete.
It's like concrete. Yeah, it's like concrete. So, you know, I've been dealing with it for a couple of years, and it's like a bubble algae magnet. It's seems to love cyano, and so I don't know. I've got 100 pounds of like this awesome Haitian live rock in my cryptic sump, and I'm thinking like,
yep,
maybe do a little swap.
You could.
I could.
You could. You
know? I don't know. What?
I don't know. You've been talking about that. You've been talking about hating
that
rock for a while. I've been
bitching about that rock for a long time.
You need to make that rock your landscaping outside and just be done with it. Set those bubbles free.
Yeah, I don't know, man. What kind of rock did you start with?
I have no idea. I got it off of Chewy.
Oh.
It's a name brand stuff that you can also get off of BRS, but I don't know. I'd have to look. But it was, I mean, it was a combination of a couple of things. So it was rock that I had in the old system in the 45. It was new rock, all of that seeded together in that 100 liter, along with, you know, water and sand and rock from locals. So people who already had good tanks, I got stuff from them to get the new tank going.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the way to do it, man, is like seed it with like some real stuff.
The rock that you're hating on is probably the rock I have.
Oh, you think? Do you have like arches and whatnot? Is that?
They weren't fancy pieces. These were just big chunks that I was able to just, and I didn't glue them together or anything. I just placed them.
Yeah.
So they're sort of stacked up and now glued together with Monopora.
Yes. Natural glue.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe it's misguided in terms of my, hate towards the rock I have in my system.
Look, when we're done, I'll look it up and I'll see what I have. And it's probably the same.
Yeah. Thing. I don't know. Maybe I got a bad batch or something.
Did you ever, it would be interesting to, do you have some that's dry that you've not used?
No.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to circulate that in a saltwater bucket for a month and then send that off for ICP.
Yeah, yeah.
To see what's living in the rock. If any.
I don't know, man. I don't know. It's it's been the bane of my existence, but I restarted my Peninsula tank. I put 50 frags into that thing. So that's
that Peninsula. Did you see the Lightbar 3s from GHL? Did you see the webpage that you can go to review the Lightbars?
No. Do you have the new Lightbars?
No, I don't, but I'm going to get them. Your Peninsula, I think, is shown in that webpage.
That is correct. I did not know that either.
I was like, oh, I know those. I know that picture.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, I think I'm going to get my hands on some of those light bars too.
Yep, because I have light bar twos connected to a Wi-Fi light, a light Wi-Fi, and then, but I want to have two light bar threes over top of my 20 gallon, which is going to be a NEM softy tank.
Yeah.
Then I want to, and then I have a tank underneath that to grow plants.
Cool.
So I'm gonna have. I'm going to light that up with one of those things too, I think.
Yeah, I think so in one of my frag tanks, I have some 400 watt 20K radium bulbs, you know, halides. And I'd like to add the light bars to that, add a little pop to that, you know, because I've got the Reef Bright halide hybrid lights. So I've got the XHOs popping with the 400 watt 20K radiums, and I love that look, but it does generate a little heat. It does generate a little heat. So, you know, my two of my frag tanks are all still halides. I got one frag tank with the Mitras, but big fan of what the Mitras have done for me, you know.
That was a beautiful tank. I'm looking forward to round two.
Yeah, me too. So,
fantastic.
What,
I don't know how you take down a tank that looks like that.
That was hard, dude.
And you're like, I'm just going to do it.
It was hard, but you know when you get to a point with a reef tank and it's become so mature and the colonies get so big that, you know, fragging certain things just becomes very difficult. And then when you have big, you know, table colonies that just kind of like lean over, crack, because the due to the it's weight terrible. Of the base.
Jesus, Keith, I feel so bad for you. Hold on, everybody, pour out a little bit for Keith's gigantic ass colonies.
Well, they're no more. They're no more.
Yep.
But I don't know, man. What's your future plans for the 100 gallon?
I'm gonna get that. There's a big green in it. It was a trade, so. You know I don't charge for corals. I'll put that cooler outside
That's
or
awesome.
Whatever. People stop by, and whatever shows up in the cooler, and it could be nothing. I don't care. But sometimes things show up in the cooler for me. So it's beer, steak, chicken.
I love it.
I got whiskey once, but I just took a hit from it because it was somebody else's whiskey. It was fancy. And then corals, anemone. So I got this small little green anemone that has turned into this gigantic thing. And I got to get it out of there because I know it's pissing off some of the other corals.
Yeah.
Like Ghani's don't like being in that tank. So I'm going to get that out, a couple of clownfish out of there, put them in the 20 IM. Then just see, then it opens up a whole lot of space for me because I don't put anything anywhere near that anemone because it's just so goddamn big. So that gives me more space. I have acros on the frag rack that I'd like to move over that are perfectly happy that I know if I move them, I'm going to screw them up. But whatever, I'll figure that out. And just let it kind of naturalize and grow. I have some cool looking monies in there that are starting to battle, and I'm going to have to figure that out. I'm going to have to move something, or I don't know. One of them that's gluing the rocks together is going to take over some of the others. It's aggressive. So I'll just have to address that. But I just like letting it, not to keep mentioning Moki, but I like how Moki allows a tank to naturalize, kind of like you did with the peninsula.
Yeah.
It just sort of did its thing.
Yeah.
And I would like to see the 100 do that. So, I mean, some of the smaller ones, I got an Elegance in there that's getting pretty damn big, but I'll let that be and let it be where it is. And some of the LPS, they're getting decent size. But I'll just let them go and then just figure out how to populate the upper levels with acros, SBS.
You know, I think you kind of get to a point, you see a tank kind of get into a groove, and then that's, I think that's the important time to not really mess with it and just let things naturally evolve.
And that's a problem for me because part of my hobby, I mean, I think we all approach this hobby a little bit differently. Some, and I totally get it, will set up a tank, keep it pristine, and just let it do what it's going to do, hold all the parameters perfect, all that kind of thing. I don't do that. I sort of screw with my tank to see how it reacts, how it responds. I enjoy the testing aspect, right? Like we've talked about with the bottled bacteria stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. My tank's always going to be my experiment, but this one looks nice. And
so don't mess with it, dude.
It's renovated. So
don't
I mess with it a little bit.
Like the ChemiClean.
I know, but I know how to recover from ChemiClean. So I'm just going to drop in a whole bunch of biodigest and the tank will wake back up. But I don't know.
So, all right. A couple of questions, comments here from the viewers. Andrew Sandler. This is for me. How do you siphon out the detritus and the cryptic? I don't. I have not been doing anything to that cryptic sump. And so I have perpetually low phosphates. My nitrates vary between 5 to 10. I think they creeped up to 15 in one of my systems. I don't have any sand in anything. So, you know, I'm very diligent about siphoning out detritus and everything else, but that cryptic sump. But you know,
flow.
Yeah.
Right. You could flow it and then water change it out. That would probably be the only
way. Of course,
way to,
when I do the swap with the Haitian Laugh Rock and the Carib Sea Laugh Rock, then I could do that.
That's going to throw all your shit.
I'm a little nervous about that. You know,
I know.
I'm a little nervous about that because I pulled out one rock of one of the pieces of Haitian Laugh Rock. And this was a suggestion by Chris Wood. Take a piece of the Haitian Laugh Rock out of the cryptic sump and put it into your display and see what happens to it, because that's going to be the stuff that you're going to see if you do a whole swap.
Why would you put it in the yeah. There's no good way to do it. Is there?
You know, I was thinking like maybe do it in different sections, like do maybe a quarter swap, take a quarter of the Carib Sea Life Rock out and put, you know, swap it with the Haitian. Because
that's going to die, right? It's going to die and it's going to release all its oomph into the tank.
You know, I don't know. I mean, will it die because it's hasn't seen the light of day? I'm not exactly sure what. So I'm a little bit nervous about doing that that swap, but maybe if I do it gradually, then it'll kind of equalize. I don't know, man.
Maybe it'll slowly die. Maybe it won't like just kick the bucket.
So you're thinking that there could be a nutrient spike, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, you might see something, especially if you're disturbing whatever's in that cryptic.
Yeah.
Can you valve out the cryptic and then mess around in that thing?
Yeah, I could.
Bypass it?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I totally do that.
Vince Fins, use cyano.
Something's going
to
pull you.
Here's a cyano tip. Use cyano to fight cyano. Put a yellow-white bulb in the sump and make a homemade algae screen with a slow water flow. Watch cyano grow on the screen and get sucked out of your display. So that's what was going on with my algae scrubber. I was starting to grow cyano on my algae scrubber, but it was too efficient. So that was the reason why I took it offline. But I mean, that's a valid point. You know, you basically grow cyano someplace else other than the display tank.
I have James's Smarter Reef skimmer filter roller combo, but I don't have the algae scrubber attachment on. Well, I have it, but I haven't installed it. I'm not sure if it works on the unit I have, but I have the scrubber for the old skimmer. I don't know. I have never done a scrubber, and I only did a Fuge for a little bit. So I've usually stayed away from those things. I just didn't want the added complication, but maybe that's what I should do.
Well, you know, the reason why I hesitate is because it will impact the traces, right? It's gonna be absorbing the iron, the iodide, and what have you. So, you know, you're gonna have to make alterations in terms of what you're dosing with the traces because of the macro. You know, I was using a Kato reactor and refugium with Kato in it, and I was having issues with my Kato crashing every now and then, which is a pain in the ass. Which is why I like the algae scrubber better than those two things, because who cares what grows in the algae scrubber? You know, so what if cyano grows in it?
Yeah, Kato dying always pissed me off. It would be thriving in there, right?
Yeah.
And then you got to reach in there with the scissors and cut out half of it because it was just getting so big. And then poof, like a month later, it's gone. I was like, what did I do? What did I change?
So Andy Bauman says, that won't work if nothing eats the cyano in the display tank. Algae scrubbers work because fish eat the algae in the display. Yep, you will need some herbivores, that's for sure.
You're going to need something that's going to eat that cyano. And they're snails. I mean, people were being cool and offering up recommendations for cyano. I'm hesitant to add animals in there to do the work, but maybe I should reconsider it.
It's tough, man. I mean, I never used to get cyanobacteria years ago I had sand beds, I had live rock, you know, real live rock. I started my tank. I never had issues with the cyano. It's just really been the last 10 years. And I think it's because it's a bit more complicated these days. We're doing more crap to our tanks. We're adding more supplements. We're doing a lot more tweaking, experimenting. And I don't think we fully understand, you know, the impact of all those different variables that are in play.
I think when cyano does what it does, it's not a single thing, right? The stellar advice you'll get from some of those in the hobby is, well, your tank's not balanced. Great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you for that. Because that's actionable. But if my numbers all look good, if my ICP looks good, if my, other than having cyano, my aquabiomics looks good, then there's obviously a piece of the puzzle that I just am not grasping. Whatever. We'll figure it out over time. It'll eventually not be a thing anymore. We'll have to see what options we have in the future. I think aquabiomics will lead to that.
Yeah. Andrew Sandler says, Keith, radium bulb is light in violets versus 450 blue. You're just adding more with reef brights, and I love them, but try them with an UV Orphic bar too. Yeah.
Yeah, that thing's not UV, Andrew. Not at all. So
the Orphic bar?
It's violet. Yeah, it's north of 400. It doesn't have anything below 400. It's just violet and above. The reef brights are 450, 470, so certainly not just 450. And then I like what you're talking about. I think if you pulled your reef brights and then threw on something that has a little fuller spectrum, like you were talking about, like Bar 3s, I think you would see a significant difference.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, I mean, Quanta's right there. Like, the Quanta Helix is coming out. Luca's new bars would just stomp the crap out of most bars that are on the market.
Why is that?
Luca did a hell of a lot, not Quanta Pro. Look at Quanta Helix now, because Luca's coming out a new bar that's also 0 to 10 dimmable. But he put a whole lot of effort into making sure that the spectrum is what it should be. And the Helix is now, he'll tell the story when it's coming out, but it is a more advanced bar.
So, dude, what do you think? Should now be a good time to give away some Reef Bum gear? Should we do a giveaway? And
do it.
This is
if I stop talking, it's because I'm emailing.
So this work shirt and Reef Bum trucker hat giveaway is courtesy of one of my customers as well as a viewer of the program. And thank you, Dennis. Thank you so much for donating a shirt, donating a hat. Can't thank you enough. He also wanted me to give a shout out to his kids, Danielle and Umayu, out of Rancho Cordova, California. So yeah, people, thank Dennis out there because he is donating. He donated a work shirt a couple of weeks ago during the live stream, and he's donating a second work shirt plus the hat for this live stream. So all right, how to enter? The tenth person who contacts me via the contact form on my website, which is reefbum.com/contact, put something like gear giveaway in the subject heading, and make sure you include your full name, your address, and your cell phone number. The cell phone number is really, really important because that's how I'm going to contact the winner via text. So I need that cell phone number. I'm going to contact the winner tomorrow. That's Wednesday. And if I don't hear back from that person by 12 midnight on Thursday, May 16th, I'm going to move on to the next name on the list. Multiple submissions do not count. And this is Continental U.S. only. So Continental U.S. only. No multiple submissions. The 10th person that contacts me. You will have your name on this shirt, so we're going to personalize it, as long as you don't have like a crazy 14-letter name or something like that.
Do that. Use your nickname, and it needs to be huge, like 8 middle names.
And I had somebody ask me about using like punctuation marks and stuff like that. You can't do that. Symbols. Cool. You can't do symbols.
Why are you holding people back? Why are you gatekeeping, Keith?
Andy, yes, it is a nice shirt. what's the Atlas? I don't know what that means.
I know what the Atlas is. I talked about
what's
it.
What's the Atlas?
You're going to be really interested in the, Atlas, the Atlas when it's released. That's Luca's new big leg.
Oh, okay. Champion Lang Todd says, I have some blue photosynthetic sponge. Spongia?
He does. That's the stuff I've seen, Todd.
I can send you boys. It contains symbiotic cyanobacteria, which supposedly competes with red slime. Interesting. So what? That's a natural. Oh, that's in. A natural predator.
Is that for display, Todd, or is that? And I think I did see it. Or is that? Have you been to Todd's place?
No.
Either of his shops. I've been to the fish store because he does have a LFS. And it's awesome.
Triggerfish 45 Reef Bum, can it say our screen name? Yeah, sure. Say whatever you want.
You could, yeah, just, I mean, or Keith will give you his screen name.
Yeah, you could use Reef Bum. I don't, you know.
You could.
Reef Bum 2?
Yeah, I did see it. It's cool looking.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Okay. Says
I'm in, Todd. Tell me how much. Send me a text.
Yeah.
Here, real quick, I'll baffle you.
What's that?
You know what this is?
No, what is that? It looks like a motherboard.
This is a, yeah, this is an old Maxi board, right? This is the standalone. I'm hitting up your audience for some fun. So I've got an old Maxi standalone. I've got a Maxi EXT. We don't use the other word anymore. We call them EXTs.
Yes.
And this is a dose.
Dose.
Oh, and I just lost my screws. Uh-oh. Oh, no, that was just the button. That's okay. Guess what fits in a dose body?
The GHL motherboard?
So I am, yeah, I'm going to turn my dose into a standalone dose. Right. So this is the Maxi dose that I made a long time ago, and it works fun. So if you have a dose that's broken, hit me up because I got another one of these Maxi boards. I can make another one out of it.
So why are you making a Frankenstein doser?
You know how loud a dose is? I mean, yeah, you know how loud the old dose is? Have you ever used one? It's so stupid.
Oh, yeah.
But if you put a GHL board inside, now suddenly it's quiet.
Really?
Uh-huh.
How's that possible?
Drivers, stepper drivers suck in a dose.
Okay.
They're loud.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. What else are you playing with?
It's one of my projects.
What else are you playing with these days, man?
We're going to do a little more backup power stuff.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about backup power.
Yeah. Backup power is important. I get shamed for this sometimes, but I'll say if you don't have backup power, and I know you do, so
I got
safe.
A lot of backup power, man.
Yeah, you do. If you don't have backup power, you don't care about your animals.
I agree with that. You know what? That's a fair statement. You know, there's no excuse. Well, a very prominent guest of mine, I can't say he didn't have any backup power. He didn't have a generator because they don't have power outages. But all you need is one power outage to, like, you know, ruin a tank.
Dude, it's like riding a motorcycle. It's if, not when. No, it's when, not if. I'm saying it the wrong way. It's when, not if. I'm like, I'm never going to crash on my motorcycle.
So what's your backup power rant?
It's not so much of a rant other than like when I was on with the boys, the Reef Beat boys, it's just have a plan. Know what you're doing. Make sure you have a backup plan. Make sure your neighbors know what you're doing. What I'm a fan of, and sometimes it's cost prohibitive, I'm a fan of having an intermediate solution between life is happy and power outage. So what I want that to be is a battery that will keep things running, whether that's a big box store, UPS, or whatever. It really doesn't matter what it is. I mean, that's my worst choice. I'm not going to go there, but something to keep it running before you get the generator running. I don't have a whole home. I know you do. I think it's natural gas or propane.
Propane, yeah.
Yep.
So you have a backup portable generator.
Yeah, I've got a couple portable generators.
So
Andrew, Tulio's not selling those bars. I know he has a couple of those, but he's not selling those to the public. And then, sorry, when I see stuff like this, it makes me twitch a little bit. And then your comment about True UV lasts much shorter time, that's not accurate. Kessels and GHL have been doing it for a really long time. They're both around 380, 385 nanometer. Those of us with Mitris know full well that the UV just keeps on working. I'm probably close to 4 years on my fixture with no issues with the UVs. Mm-hmm. And then if you can get a Kessel that'll last that long, its UV will also continue to be firing along just fine. Sorry, had to jump. So yeah, a couple portable generators, but EcoFlow, I mean, Rich Colombo says it right there. I use a EcoFlow River 2, anything with LFP, also known as lithium iron phosphate. I wouldn't buy anything with lithium because you're just not going to get a decent service life out of it. It's going to be similar, actually, to lead acid. So
for those of us that don't know what an EcoFlow is, what is an EcoFlow?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, there's different brands, but I like EcoFlow. It is just one of those little portable battery generators that you for pretty low money if you catch them on sale. And it just, you just have something that'll keep flow moving. I prefer to keep the return pump going because I don't want my pump.
That's the most,
or my,
that's
the go stale.
That's the most important thing, is to like have a backup, source for the return pump. And, is that a, so that, is that an automatic thing, dude, that you've got with the return pump?
Yeah. So the River 2 can act like a UPS. So it can act just like something you could get at Staples or Best Buy or something like that. But it's a 20 amp hour. You can plug into either the DC, because it has DC side, which is 12 volts, but you can use a boost converter, pump that up to 24. Yep. And it just works. There's a setting in the app. There's an app for this thing that you just make sure that it's always on. And you just fire it up, and then it's just on, and it's working, and it's lithium iron phosphate, LFP. So there's no fire risk. There's a if it gets pissed and hot, there's a smoking risk, but it's not going
to
catch on fire.
So you have to fire it up. It's not going to be an automatic thing.
Nope. You don't have to do anything. You just leave it there, turn it on, and now it's a UPS.
Oh, okay. So
it's small. It's the width of your GHL doser 2.1.
So John Wright is asking, in the UK, we have hardly any power outages, and I'm on the first floor flat, so what's the best for all equipment, not just Ecotec? Would the EcoFlow, just to run that return pump, be the a good day?
Yeah, if you're just, yeah. Don't worry about heater. Don't worry about lights. If it's an all-in-one, that's super easy, because it's just a little pump. If it is whatever, it doesn't really matter what kind of tank, as long as you have something to keep your return pump running. Now, if you got a big old monster something return pump, you're going to need a decent sized battery until you get your generator, if you can do that. But yeah, just keep flow moving. And my preference is return pump, because I don't want my sump to sit there for like 6 hours not moving.
No, we were talking about that when I had Sanjay and Mike on, you know, Sanjay's like, can you get by without the skimmer running for a few days? Yeah. Can you get by without the lights for a few days? Yeah. Return pump? No. You know, even like for a few hours, that's going to potentially start causing some problems in that tank, and you're going to have some stressed out corals. So yeah, if what you want to be able to back up, it's great to have the recirculating pumps on battery backup. But you need some sort of return going between the tank and the sump, just for you know, a host of reasons. So that's a very, very important piece of equipment. Andy Bauman is saying, try the Reef Box.
Yep.
You got it?
There's one right here.
What's the Reef Box?
A local guy here makes it, and it's a very simple device. If you have a 12-volt battery and you have a 24-volt pump, then you grab a Reef Box and you plug in. I don't know which board is which, so I'm just going to fake this. But you plug in the power supply from your return pump here. Okay. And then you plug in your battery with a boost converter to take it to 24 volts. And it's like a $20 item that you just attach to a 12-volt pump to make. And it makes it super easy. And then you attach your return pump to here. While on regular power, it's powered by the power brick that came with your pump.
Okay.
But if that breaks, or if you lose power, the Reef Box automatically switches over to the battery power. So it's just a quick switcher.
Oh, cool.
That goes, and that makes it really easy. You don't have to DIY anything. You know, I've been thinking about this, obviously. And these were just here. I didn't stage, but I'm me. So I have the regular parts for me to make my own with a boost converter inside a little box. So I can just stick this where it needs to go and it just runs and I don't have to worry about it. And then just test it every once in a while. Make sure it switches over.
Yeah. Unreefer.
But really. Just run your return pump.
Yeah, Unreefer is asking, since summer is coming, do you think it's smart to have a small chiller as an emergency gear with a generator? You want to take that first, and I can chime in.
Yeah, I mean, fans. Your tank can heat up a little bit. And you can freeze some bottles and keep them, right? You can pull whatever you can pull. You can pull your thing of hamburger out of your freezer and put it in a Ziploc and float it in your tank. I wouldn't chase a chiller.
I think chillers are a thing that you're not going to see on too many systems these days. You know, maybe some larger systems that you know, have a lot of pumps that are adding heat to the system. But I think, by and large, your average reef tank these days, you don't need a chiller, even in the summertime during a power outage or something like that. I mean, I think a lot of people just get by running an AC window unit in the same room with a reef tank. But like you said,
I had a chiller. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was gonna say, like you said though, there's many things you can do during a power outage to keep the tank from overheating. I mean, the lights are gonna be out probably on that tank during a power outage, so that's not going to be a source of heat. And you know, even LEDs will add some heat to a tank. It's not just like a, you know, tank that's lit by halides. But you know, I think obviously you could run a simplified system if you've got an extended power outage. You don't need all the stuff that you got running and gunning on a reef tank during when you do have utility power going versus when you don't.
I have a chiller. It's in storage. I kind of don't want a chiller. Actually, mine turned into a phosphate factory. It was nasty. I don't know what was in there, but when I had crazy high phosphates and I couldn't figure it out, and I pulled the chiller out and I smelled, and whatever that path is, once it goes in that death box and comes out the other side, apparently an entire colony of elephants were dead inside of my chiller, and it was just releasing phosphates like crazy. I never figured out what it was, but it took a long time to flush that crap out.
I have a chiller on my system that has some, you know, the frag tanks with the halides, and I'm not sure it went on last year, because I switched my display tank from halides to the Mitras, the LEDs.
Yep.
So that was definitely a lot less heat in the system. But I also have like some industrial fans over my two frag tanks, my three frag tanks. I've got some real serious fan action going on. And I think that, you know, if you could have fans, add fans to the equation, whether it's a sump or whether it's a display tank, that's going to be a great way to bring the tank down a couple of degrees. It's not going to be as efficient as in a chiller, but my chiller is not in a great location. I did a real shitty job in terms of plumbing my chiller in, and it's in a bad location. So it basically, the exhaust goes right into my frag tank room, and it heats up that room. So, you know, it's like,
oh yeah,
it's not good. So I really should just take that whole thing offline, because it's a bad engineering job on my part.
Over the years,
let's talk about that, man. Let's talk about like our fails. You know, what are some of the things that we've done that we've regretted? And I cut you off there. Why don't you finish your thought before we?
No, it's okay. It's long gone. I'm old. You know how that works. I think I added complication, like entirely too much complication, because I'm like, man, I should do this. I should do this. I should do this. And then over the years, you have completely kludged together just a bag of cats. Like there's just like you can't recover from it without a complete do-over. And that's what I had done with, I mean, I had that 45 in there forever, and then I attached a 40 breeder to it, and it was growing everything like crazy. It was so stupid good. And then it's got some sort of bacterial infection that I thought I knew what it was, but I'm wrong. And it was just overcomplicated. And I think one of the best things I ever did as a reef hobbyist is completely tear that whole thing down and make it go away.
Yeah.
And then renovated the basement, and then just totally started over. Except, I mean, I kept the tub going and I kept the critters going, and I shared it with Lynn and Moki locally, so I was able to get stuff back. But just, I think the dumbest thing I've ever done, besides all the little dumb things, the big dumb thing is just so much crazy complication.
Yeah.
I'm running a very simple system. You, what do you think?
No, I'm with you, man. I got to a, you know, kind of a point where I started really doing too much to my tank, adding too many things, making things too complicated. So I have tried to simplify it. You know, I was raising, culturing the live phyto, and you know, my pods loved it. I'm not sure the corals, yeah, you know, responded, you know, that well. It was a lot of work. It took me like a half an hour every week to culture the live phyto, you know, clean out the vessels that I was using to culture them. So, you know, when I was dosing it, so I was also, you know, I was using amino acids years ago, and that was like kind of a cyano thing going on, and yep. And the macro was frustrating. I already talked about that in terms of the keto. So I just got out of that business in terms of using the macro and just trying to use the bacteria, the remediate, to help a little bit with the nutrient control. But I just kind of find that the thing that works the best is just try to like not too much stuff to the tank, and stability, and try not to use chemicals. You know, I really I do not want to use ChemiClean. I hear you, man. You know, it's something that
I did not want to do.
You gotta do what you gotta do, and the tank looks like crap, and it's frustrating the hell out of you, and what have you. And you know, I think that I said before also that you gotta look at the corals, you gotta be a good observer of your animals and take cues from them. So I have a policy now. If everything is looking really good, I'm not gonna try new stuff. I'm not going to experiment. I'm not going to I'm not going to upset the apple cart. I'm just going to kind of like stay the course. So if somebody reaches out to me, is like, hey, you know, I got this, but you know, will you try that? I was like, probably not. Probably not. Except for maybe that stuff that Todd's talking about, and that
might be fun.
Maybe I'll try that.
But even then, I'm unnecessarily cautious about adding new corals to my tank, only because that I don't know where it was probably 4 years ago when I had that infection in my tank that it just wiped out acros. Like I was just watching them just slowly all of them die, and I was like, this ain't cool. And I think that's now made me gun shy in terms of bringing in other corals, and I shouldn't be that way. I mean,
I'm doing the same thing, man.
The chances of that happening again is low. As long as I'm keeping a healthy system, theoretically, as long as it's healthy, I introduce new stuff. Anything that is bad that's coming in with it, like I've even talked about testing the water that comes from coral houses just to see what's in their water. A/B testing, like blowing an A/B test on that stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a little too far.
I'm doing the same thing, man. I am in a period of time right now where no new corals are coming into my systems. Things are good. Things are looking good. I'm a little paranoid in terms of like, you know, having a bunch of people on that we, you know, talk a lot about the coral pathogens and the antibiotics and how things can come in even on snails and stuff like that. And
clams.
So there's a lot of, ways that crap can hitchhike in to a reef tank. And you know, listen, it's not realistic to kind of have this policy of like, I'm not bringing anything else into my tanks, you know, forever, because that's just not going to happen, right? I think there's a but you know, I think there's also kind of like a period of time where you want to just be you kind of want to know that what you got is what you have, and that you know, unless you do a major screw up, then things should be okay. And that's the thing, right?
Should be.
Things should be okay. But a reef tank is a living, breathing, evolving thing. So life does find a way to kind of...
even the bad life.
Right. Exactly. It finds a way, you know? So it's probably our thinking is not realistic in terms of not bringing anything new in. But I guess it does decrease the odds, right?
It does. I think proper husbandry, right? Start there. If you're keeping things cleanish, clean enough, you're not having. I mean, there's some people that are operating with like big, thick detritus beds, and I was like, okay, it works, but what happens when it doesn't? But I also feel the same way about a relatively clean tank. So I mean, whatever. The bad thing's gonna happen. You just gotta hopefully have the tank balanced and stable and happy enough to be able to fight it off. Like my kid got sick. I'm gonna equate it to the same thing, but my kid got sick last week and he stayed home from school. Like he got his ass kicked. And I mean, he's almost 18 and he's like, oh, I'm dead. I'm dying. Ah, this sucks so bad. And then he and I watched a movie together, two movies, and I got his cold, but it was light. I'm not a teenager treating myself like a teenager. I'm trying to treat myself okay. And I didn't get it like he got it, even though it was the same thing. So I'm pretending my old grandpa ass was healthy enough to be able to fight off whatever my 18-year-old had when he's not getting enough sleep and whatever, hanging out with his friends. But I don't know. Try to keep it sort of healthy, and hopefully it will continue to be healthy for you.
And you know, the other important thing is regular maintenance, right? If you don't keep up with that stuff, then that could really be a disaster, because that's the last thing you want to have is an equipment failure. And I really do think that return pump maintenance and peristaltic dosing pump head maintenance are probably two of the most important things that I try to keep up with. Well, I do keep up. I got a checklist, and every week it's like, all right, this is what's on my checklist for the weekly maintenance. Do the cleaning on the peristaltic dosing head pumps and then recalibrate. That's a very important thing.
Yep, agreed. I got a big bag of GHL doser parts.
Yep.
Just in case, because if you have a tube go on you, you don't want to have to be worrying about overnighting something to you. That's silly. Buy it when it's on sale and have a big bag of it. So I've got a huge bag of just parts for dosers, just in case.
Yeah.
And then I have a spare return pump. So what I like to do, and I haven't done with this tank yet, but what I used to do is every year I'd swap the pump.
Oh, nice.
Because it's easy to have the same pump and it uses the same controller.
Yeah.
So just swap. So you pull the old one out, clean it, make sure it's okay with the controller that you have in the box that you didn't use on the new pump that you just put in.
Yeah.
So if you're using the same thing, you got two of them, you just swap it in. And then clean the old one and make sure the old one's ready to go a year later.
Yeah, you know.
Or just buy another one, because I'm buying cheap pumps. My pumps are like $65, $70.
Yeah, I always use two return pumps in my system. So both of my systems have two active return pumps, which is good. But I do want to have a spare return pump. And I got to talk to I got to figure this out, because I've got some Royal Exclusive pumps. The controllers went kerblooey on me, and it was user error on my part. So I gotta try to see if I can figure out a way to get those fixed. But yeah, return pumps are key. So dude, you wanted to also, we kind of talked a little bit about this, but you wanted to talk about full spectrum lighting too. That was one of the topics I had written down here, man.
Yeah. So I guess. We should, because of the halide, I mean, you being a halide guy, if you say full spectrum and you're talking about LEDs, that's like rubbing a cat backwards to halide people, because they're like, you're not full spectrum because let me put my teeth in, fucker. And, right? And I'm like, okay, I get it. It's not full spectrum. You're certainly not hitting everything that a halide is going to give you on an electromagnetic scale. It's just not going to, it's not there. Electromagnetic spectrum. It's just not, whatever. LEDs are a little narrower. But I kept watching Sanjay, right? Sanjay's, don't tell me what to do. And then he's got his Radeons, he's got his Pros, and he just puts all the channels to 100. you know, all the way up. And then it sounds like the guy's running it at max power too, but I'm not sure about that. But I know Sanjay's been running his Radeons with all channels up forever. And I'm like, I mean, this tank looks good. So I started with with the Mitras and the Refi, and I just started scooching them up. First, I started with green. So whatever. My theory on lighting, and I've got multiple spectrometers, and I've tested all the lights, not all the lights, a whole lot of lights, and they're all damn near the same thing. Like, there's very few differentiators. Pin your blues. Pin the channels that they call UV, which aren't, except for Kessel and GHL. Pin your violets, pin your blues, and then start scooching up the others until it looks nice to you. So I started doing that, and I already had some white in there, but not a lot. And I pushed the green up, and I was like, well, that looks good. And then I started pushing the whites up, and I'm like, screw it. I pushed them all up, and the tank looks great. It makes it a little more difficult to take pictures that are representative, because all of our little orange filter thingies are all intended for stupid American blue tanks. But there's a brown I'm going to get that's apparently supposed to be the ticket. I don't know how you're doing with halide, but that's a little different battle, because you don't have the wide blues. You just got really spiky little whatevers. But eventually I took the Mitras and the Refi all the way up. And then I just tuned for spectrum. My par. Yeah, I dropped the intensity because I was adding, every time I slide a white, I'm getting blue. So a white will have a 450 peak. So I just made sure in my head to remember that every time I slide a white, I'm adding more blue. So I need to bring down my intensity so I'm not pissing off my corals. So, I mean, I dropped it down maybe 60%, 50% of what it was after I slid them all up.
How did you know what to bring it down to? Were you just kind of like looking at your corals?
Oh, I totally guessed. Guessed. And the corals were fine. Like, they did just fine. So maybe 50% was
a good
number.
Did you do this like in an acclimation type of mode?
Absolutely. Okay. So I brought it down 50% and I gave it a month to ramp it up, and it was fine. And now I love the look. Like, I walk in and it's not, I have a blue period. I have a blue period in the morning because I still like that Black Panther velvet on the wall from the 80s look, but I just don't want it all the time, right? I want to be able to see the blue. The blue comes up in the morning. It looks really good. And I got this nice blue glowy period in at night when I'm downstairs watching TV or something. But the whole day is all channels up. And I know, like, that cycle you're running on your Mitras,
which is basically, you gave that to me. I mean, you produced that.
The first thing you said when you started running that, you're like, it's a little more blue than I'm used to, but I think I can get used to it. I'm paraphrasing, but that was kind of it. And I think you should slide them all up and see what you think. Just
Dude, didn't you hear what I was saying before? If things are going well, I don't mess with them.
I mean, you're working with frags in that tank. That peninsula is not what it was. You got a do-over going on, so here's your chance.
I don't know, man. That's going to take a lot, but maybe I should experiment with the other tank. Matt Reef, thank you so much for that super chat. Appreciate everything Jim is doing for the hobby. Keith, you're a legend. Thanks, guys. Appreciate that. I don't know, man. It's
Sammy. Sammy, don't get me started on the par wise.
Meter. It's awesome. What kind of par were you getting at? What kind of par are you getting out of the full spectrum lighting?
I mean, the same as, now it's higher than it was. I'm not getting big numbers. I've got my lights 13 inches above the lid, above the top.
Okay.
And I don't run those lights hot. I think the Mitras are at 70%. I think the Refi is... Oh, it's only 120 watts out of 270. So I'm not shining a lot of light. We collectively as a hobby talked about the par wars, right? You need to get that par like firing away. And then we shifted away from that and we moved to spectrum. And then for whatever reason, we decided that spread not we, some decided spread was the most important thing, which I think is crap. But spread's cool, and spread's important, but spread's easy with adding lights or bars or whatever. Yeah, but
gets more expensive. Really,
yeah, I think spectrum's a thing. I am. I think the highest maybe my coral are seeing is 150, 200 bar.
Really?
That's I've got. It? Yeah. Oh, dude, I got a Fox Flame that's living at 60, and it's really? So freaking happy.
Wow.
Yep. I've got a couple all the way on the right hand side that are 60 to 80, and they're happy.
My, you know, in both tanks, you know, Peninsula tank more so because it's a shallower tank. You know, I'm getting like 350 in the bottom where the corals are at, and then 500 plus at the top. But that was groovy for me, man, because the corals were digging that. And yep. But you know what? Every tank is different. Every tank is different. Unreef or silly question, does putting an LED channel 100% reduce the lifespan of those LEDs on the light at least significantly?
No, because you're not running the light. I'm not running my light at 100%. Now, if you bought lights that are too small in terms of power intensity and you're having to run your lights high, then yeah. I mean, if they're not effectively cooling, they're certainly not going to last as long as a light that's running 50% power. But pushing the lights, I mean, having the channel high isn't driving the individual diodes high. That's the intensity part.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of changes have you noticed since you've made the change to full spectrum?
Nothing. It looks good.
Just looks stuff's good. Growing. Your
looks
stuff
good.
Is happy.
And then because I increased the PAR a little bit, alkalinity consumption has improved. So, I mean, I just gave my corals more light and it looks better to my eyes. And I know not everybody's down for that white look. So
yeah,
I get, but I'm like, well, I think, what did Sanjay? He was like, they're there. I'm just going to use them. So mm-hmm. I'm like, it kind of makes sense. So I just threw them up and I was like, well, damn, I like the way that looks.
So how's the, somebody else wants to talk about flow. How's the slurry thing going, man?
Slurry's fine. I'm running, saturated Kalkwasser is 2 teaspoons. Sorry, I'm going to use freedom units, but 2 teaspoons per gallon. And I'm running 4 teaspoons per mm-hmm. gallon. And that's it's mixed by 2 JBO SLW-10s. I use 2 only because what if one craps out and I don't know?
Yeah.
So the slurry is always moving. Yeah. So I'm just double saturated. And then I dose it the same way. It's also a big bucket, a 6-gallon bucket that's out in the garage. So it's not something I have to hide because it's just along the wall. It's not something I worry about. So I'm not using pickling lime. I'm using food grade from Mississippi Line. It's used for growing mushrooms, I think. But, I mean, it's easy. It's the same as dosing saturated. I'm just running it out of a bucket that's mixed all the time.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm not worried about it. ICP results come back fine. I'm not worried about what's in that calc. I'm using good calc. So
what's your pH range these days?
Oh, after it was 8.1 to 8.5, somewhere around there. But since I did the ChemiClean, because ChemiClean just whacks, it kills stuff in your tank, yeah. So your pH drops.
Yeah.
So now I'm 7.8 to 8.2.
Oh, really? Wow.
It'll move back up. I mean, this happens every time I chemiclean.
How many times do you chemiclean in a year? Twice?
Two. Yep.
Yeah.
I believe this is the last one.
Yeah. What was the question I saw here before? Let's touch on flow. But, the DeLulla. Luminagic LED lights. Any thoughts on those?
Yeah, I have a Blaze X Mini, but that's not something they're selling anymore. I've not used the X4. I've not seen it. I've not held one. If I hit up Anthony at DeLua, he would probably hook me up, but I just haven't gone there yet. It looks like Worldwide Corals is having good experience with them because they put a bunch over their tanks. I mean, it's a nice looking little light. It's low power. Well, it's not low par. It's low wattage. And I mean, it's an expensive light. So I think those who use them Wait, didn't Joe, isn't Joe, Joe got one. Is he using it over his tank? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay. Tusi?
Yeah, I can't recall.
I think he ended up with one, but yeah, I haven't played with him.
Yeah. On Reaper, has Jim started his sodium hydroxide adventure yet?
Yeah, it's there. It's turned off right now because of the
Chemi-Clean.
Chemi-Clean. But I have it on the system. If I test calcium and calcium's a little higher, I'll just back off calc just a little bit and I'll fire up the sodium hydroxide.
Flow. What are you doing with flow, man?
I got four JBOs in the tank, so I've got two SDW-16s, and those look like MPs. Those look like Vortex. And then I've got two SLW-30s, which look like big AIs.
Okay.
So I'm just, and then whatever I'm getting from the return pump, but I'm just, I don't do anything fancy with flow. I don't vary flow. I'm not chasing waves.
Yeah.
I just run them just to keep it turbulent. And I expect that at some point, those power heads are just going to interact with each other and keep it turbulent enough in the tank. So nothing fancy.
Yeah. I think, turbulent is a good word. Washing machine effect. I always like, to kind of try to mimic that sort of thing. And I think, I don't know really in terms of like programmable type of, you know, things like that, you can do, how much of an impact that makes. But I think just have as much random flow as possible. And obviously it depends on the kind of animals you have in your tank. So it's an SPS dominant tank. And if you don't have any sand, then you can crank it up a little bit more. Or if you do have some sand, I guess you could have coarser sand, that sort of thing. So, but,
I run them up just when the sand starts to move. Cause I do have sand. It's not a thick sand bed, but, once I am moving sand so I can see the bottom of the tank, that's when I stop.
Yeah, and I use the MP40s, MP60s, the Ecotec, and pretty much I run all of mine on the Jara modes. So whatever that's doing, it's doing. But I kind of like it. And the big thing for me is with my SPS, I just got to make sure that I see some polyps moving in every part of the tank.
Yep. I'm looking, you know, there's coral that don't want all that movement, and I just make sure that where I place those is low movement, and then the others like acros, SPS, that like movement, I just put those where I know the water is moving.
Sammy31D, any VCA flow nozzle? I've never tried any of those flow nozzles, have you?
No, and I would use the ones from Clevin, but no. That's, I mean, it's not random, but that's not something I need. I'm just using the flat nozzles that came with my tank. I'm going to run through these real quick if you don't mind, Keith.
Yeah.
I do run constant flow all the time. I'm not messing with it. I let the power heads fight it out. They do what they're going to do. my aluminum levels, that question was because of the Mississippi lime food grade that I'm using. My aluminum levels are fine. There's no issue there. Same with arsenic. Same with all of the other things that
potentially could be.
You might be told that are a problem.
Yeah.
And then there was a point about the par wise. I have a par wise, and it always reads 20% low par, and I wouldn't use it. Because I have other spectrometers, I wouldn't use it to measure par. If you do have a par wise, you're reading 20% low compared to a 500 series apogee. Mm-hmm. So you just need to keep that in mind. So if you're targeting par, specific par values from the internet or previous testing with an apogee, if you then use a par wise in the same spot, you're reading 20 low. So if you then adjust your lights to read what you had with either, an online reference or an apogee, you're potentially adding 20% more. And if you're up around 250, you're going to add 20% more. That's a significant number. So you just got to be careful with it.
Gotcha. Let me ask you one more question. So we've been kind of talking about, you know, keeping things simple and not doing too many tweaking, you know, too much tweaking to our tanks and what have you. Is there anything out there that has really piqued your interest in terms of something you you kind of are curious about trying? Or are you good?
I mean, I'll go back to aquabiomics because I think that's something that we're starting to play with. Yeah. I mean, Andy's been doing it for a while. Eli certainly providing the service. What I'm interested in is when Eli gives you, in aggregate, what his tested tanks look like, and then I see mine. What I'm looking for soon, and I'm hoping to see it soon, and which is also why I'm testing all these bacteria products. What I'm looking for is how do I get my tank to what we could collectively agree is some sort of ideal microbiome. Because I think that exists, but I also think what an ideal microbiome will look like can be several different variations of the same. Like I had a super populated microbiome, but it doesn't have pelagi in it.
Yep.
It doesn't have that big pink band that Andy's really focusing on. So that's what I'm excited for. I'm excited for what that will ultimately bring to the hobby. And then on the testing side, some of the things that people like Salem Clemens from Reef Builders, what he's going to bring to the hobby. So it's not so much all the equipment is so similar to each other, right? You're really not, there's very little to differentiate. I mentioned this lighting, flow, food is still an unknown thing because I'd like to test some of the food because I don't know what's going on in there. But I think whatever we can do as a hobby to find the ideal conditions so we can all be successful, that would be awesome. Like, you tell me what I need to do to my bacteria to make sure cyano isn't a thing, and I'm all in. I'm going to do that. And I don't have to use chemicals, and I'm going to make sure that my tank is healthy. So, right, no cyano, no death to acros because of some sort of bacterial problem. That's what I'm excited about.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we're not there.
No.
Soon.
Yeah. We need more data.
Yeah, I agree. And then, I mean, not to continue to pimp the service, but the more data we get, the better data we'll have.
Right.
So
that's true with any database.
I think that's important. Like, I mean, I just bought 7 of those tests.
Wow.
I think it was 7.
Yeah.
6 or 7.
You're doing some experimenting there, huh?
Well, yeah, I have some stuff to test. I want to see what those pesky Germans are giving us in their bottles.
All right, one last reminder about the work shirt and hat giveaway. Thanks again to Dennis, who donated very generously the work shirt and the hat, and also thank you out. Shout out to his kids, Daniel and Umayu. They're all at our Rancho Cordova, California. And I'll say it one more time. If you're the 10th person to enter that contacts me via the contact form on my website, which is reefbum.com/contact, put gear giveaway or something similar to that in the subject heading. You need to include your full name, address, and cell phone number because that's how I'm going to contact the winner is the cell phone number. That's very important. I'm going to contact them via text, and the winner is going to be contacted tomorrow. If you blow that off and don't get back to me by 12 midnight Thursday, I'm going to move on to the next person. So multiple submissions do not count, and continental U.S. only. So, dude, man.
You better turn off that contacts only crap. If you want to get something from Keith, you better turn that off. Let anybody text you.
Yeah, that's true. Jim, man.
Wait, I'm going to ask. What are you excited about?
What do you mean, what am I excited about?
You asked me.
Oh, what am I excited about?
For the future. Yeah, what's coming?
What am I excited about the future? I think more good information that we have out there, the better. I think that it's a tough environment we're in these days because there's just so many different ways that people get their information, and sometimes it's not good information. You know, I try on this live stream to kind of put out there information that I think is going to be useful. Sometimes it might not be, but that's a cool thing, right, man, about having these kind of chats. You can kind of like really get into stuff and really I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing to have conversations like this between folks like, you know, like ourselves, because social media, it can be a little tough to dissect certain things, and yep, things can be misconstrued. So I think what I'm hoping for is kind of a reverting back to the way things were back when, you know, I got in the hobby 30 years ago, 20 years ago. The knowledge was, you know, something that was a very important element. So I think it's really important for people to have, to follow somebody that's had success, have a good mentor, and kind of stick with that sort of thing. I think, so I'm more excited about hopefully kind of sifting out the misinformation, the bad information, and getting more into the educational stuff. So I think guys like Salem, you know, some new blood is a good thing. But I also think that, you know, the old guard, including myself, is an important, you know, audience to listen to. You know, I see some comments like, you know, Sanjay and Mike, it's kind of like the old grumpy men and all that sort of thing. But people, they, you know, have the experience, have been through the wars and all that stuff. That it's very important people to listen to is the people that have all the experience. So I think you can kind of get very caught up in the Instagram sort of stuff and the blue light crazy things and the crazy looking corals. Like, wow, man, look at all that stuff. And so I'm just kind of hoping that people lean more on gathering, getting educated, getting good information, having patience. It's a really big thing. So that's kind of like my thing, I think, is hopefully people don't get caught up in the instant gratification part of this hobby, which can be tough to, you know, prevent somebody from getting caught up in that stuff.
Yeah, the wash, rinse, repeat of buying corals and killing them and buying corals and killing them and buying corals and killing them. Maybe stop. And then just thinking about it. And actually, Paul just mentioned Taras.
Yeah.
He's another good source of information.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. I think we have some people that are experts in their field that we should be paying more attention to. You know, there's people do pay attention to certain people, and that's a good thing. But I think we have to be more grounded in what we lean on to take action with our tanks. I think you made a great point earlier in that you know, there's a lot of data out there, and you take in a lot of data, but you don't always act on it. And I think that's a very important point to note is don't always act on the data. And like I mentioned at the beginning, observe those corals. That is so freaking important.
Oh, totally.
Totally. So important. You know, if things are looking good, I'll say it again, don't mess with them. Don't mess with the tank. Agreed. So.
Or do it, because it's part of your hobby.
Or go ahead. Fuck with things.
Or whatever. It's a hobby.
Yeah.
Just, Jesus, don't kill it.
I mean, it's good to have an experimental tank. I mean, you experiment with your tanks and stuff like that, so.
All the time.
Yeah, that is part of the fun. But.
Yep.
All right, dude. Well, listen, Jim, man, I appreciate you. Thank you again for taking the time to join us tonight and sharing your thoughts and insights. It's always a pleasure, man.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. I always like being on. Thanks for having me.
So that's going to do it for this show, folks. Again, I want to thank Jim for taking the time to be on the stream. I also want to thank my sponsors one more time, Polo Reef. Make sure to check out Polo Reef's new YouTube video that drops this Friday. School in Iowa travels to New York to visit Polo Reef, where 40 high school students passionate about marine aquariums get an experience of a lifetime and even give the Polo Reef team a fantastic presentation. Like I mentioned, I'm going to be having the person leading that program, Dr. Gregory Barad, on the show next week. Make sure to subscribe to the Polar Reef YouTube channel at Polar Reef for video drop notification. Champion Lighting and Supply, besides being a place for hobbyists to produce saltwater, purchase saltwater aquarium supplies online, Champion Lighting is also a wholesale distributor for many popular brands. If you own an aquarium store or an aquarium service company, contact Champion Lighting through their website at championlighting.com to set up a wholesale account. GHL, we're both all in on the GHL products, the Proflux, the Dosers, Mitra Lights, Cage Director, etc. They produce high-quality German-engineered products. For more information or to purchase their stuff, you can visit aquariumcomputer.com/USA. They also sell their products on reefbum.com. A big thank you to Paul, who is the moderator as well as the president of the Boston Reefer Society. Please join and support your local reefing clubs. They are so important to this hobby. And that was another thing probably should talk more about, but local reefing clubs, very,
absolutely,
very important. All episodes of Rapid Reef Bum are available as podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Amazon. As I mentioned, I'm going to have Dr. Gregory Berard on next week, Tuesday, May 21st, 7 p.m. And if you want to check out the full upcoming schedule of guests, visit reefbum.com under the YouTube section. Until next time, be safe and be well. Later.